You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 284th edition of Assembly Call Radio and our 934th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of March 30th, 2023. I'm your host, Andy Bottoms. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. Well, I know we always have the Keith Smart shot in there, but fitting today on the 36-year anniversary of that national championship, a national championship that 8-year-old me would not have assumed was the last one I would have seen by this point in my life, but here we are. With that being said, a couple things I wanted to mention in the banner moment this week. One is a bit of a somber note. Jack Forney, who has been a longtime follower of the show, we got an email from a friend of his over the weekend that he passed away on Saturday at the age of 72. His daughter, Shaylin, is actually the person who got our show on at the original Yogis. And so she had gotten the folks there to put it on after the games. And I know we had to talk with Jack a number of times when we were in town for the for our meetups or whatever else. I think it was Jared and I and my wife had lunch with him at Upland, one of the very first ones that we had, and just an awesome guy, awesome Hoosier fan, and met his longtime wife at IU. So what could be more Hoosier than that, I think. And so certainly our thoughts go out to his family, and may he rest in peace. One of the teams that Jack liked to follow was the men's team, but he also was a big fan of the women's team. They mentioned that in his obituary, and great headline for the women's basketball program today is Terry Morin was named AP Coach of the Year. I had a cool video on where the team, I'm not sure what the guys was that they got her to Assembly Hall and out on the court that they used to try to surprise her with it. But at any rate, her dad and sister came out, and Mackenzie Holmes was kind of acting like she was going to interview her, and basically her question was, what does it feel like to be named Coach of the Year? And so that was how she found out. It was kind of a cool video, cool story to see them and how excited they were for her, and obviously what it meant to Coach Morin. And while the end of the season didn't go how any of us really wanted it to, I think it's a good bit of a capper to the season that really just underscores what an amazing year it was and what a phenomenal job that Terry Morin has done with that program. And so congratulations to her and the women's team as we go through that. Obviously some exciting transfer news, which we'll talk about a lot on the men's side of things, but the banner moment for me this week was Terry Morin being named the AP Coach of the Year. All right, so let me introduce my co-host for this week. To my left, he's a longtime high school basketball coach in the state of Indiana and the founder of Delphi Bracketology. He is the coach, Brian Ponzoni.
Well, that's the wrong coach song there.
You blew it.
I really thought maybe you'd worked up some other music for yourself that you just.
I was been, waiting.
I think you've been on spring break this week.
Here we go.
Studio. Days when a movie cost a dollar. Heaven help you if you ever decide to pop your collar. Play hard, but remember, fake hustle is a crime. He's the coach, and it's Tonsoni time. All right, Coach, it's Tonsoni time. Apparently, Tony Adrani time. It's any time you want it to be when you're running the soundboard.
I was ready for like a WWE moment where Tony walked in from behind him and hit him with a chair or something.
Absolutely. We should have set that up. Man, it's not an Assembly Radio call radio without me messing up the soundboard. That's what you get for having an old guy run the soundboard. Just an interesting time for athletics. Congratulations to Coach Terry Morin. Well-deserved. How about the softball ladies have won several in a row, including sweeping Purdue, and the Indiana baseball team has found their way back into postseason projections as a 3 seed in the tournament. They're 18-7, I believe. I just witnessed 4 straight wins in Bloomington over the weekend and Tuesday night. They're a fun group to watch. Coach Mercer has them going in. And then the thing we're all here to talk about is the transfer portal with the news of Peyton Sparks and a lot of rumors flying around of other people. It's an exciting time. You wish Indiana basketball was still playing, but now we have a roster to build. And I look forward to talking about that with all of you.
All right. And to my right, we have the senior writer for The Big Lead, President Emeritus of the Race Thompson Fan Club. Weird to say President Emeritus.
I know, man. That's tough.
In that case now. And the world's most underemployed shot doctor.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
The dude just interrupted his own jingle.
All right, Ryan, it's opening day. Hope springs eternal for you as a Padres fan. Reds fan have been dashed immediately.
You got my buddy Will Myers, though.
Reds. I walked downstairs for the Reds. First 3 batters had reached base. I'm like, maybe this is going to be different. Next guy hits into a double play.
Yeah, so, pretty classic.
What are you going to do? Anyway, Will Myers that hit into the double play.
We love Will around here. When they won the NLDS over the Dodgers last year, everybody was partying in the bars here, and Will went bar to bar to bar, buying everybody in each bar a drink. So we love Will Myers around here. I think that the topic that I want to hit is unrealized potential, and I think that you look at the guys who have transferred out of Indiana, and Logan Duncan, 4-star, Tamar Bates, 4/5-star. Jordan Geronimo, he was the high school player of the year in New Hampshire and had all this upside. And I think what it brings into focus is that recruiting is important. Development is just as important, and developing players and a lot of that development is on the players themselves to get in the gym, to get in the lab, get better, work on their faults. It's also on the coaching staff and the program to bring them along. Now, Geronimo was here under the previous administration. Didn't really turn into the guy. They always wanted to sort of make him like kind of a super athletic stretch 4-ish, maybe play on the perimeter guy. Never found consistency with his ball handling or shooting. Tamar Bates, I love this kid's upside and I love his personality and attitude, but he never found consistency. Logan Duncan, we're going to talk about him between segments 1 and 2, what happened there. I think that we just as fans have to realize that recruiting and landing the recruit is not the end of the journey. It's about getting them on campus and turning them into college basketball players. Because if you don't develop a 5-star, he's just a really good high school player. You have to take that next step and make them into a good college basketball player. And again, I would say that this staff has definitely had some hits on that road too. But as with any program, you're going to have hits and misses. And that's when you wind up seeing guys transfer. And that's why I think that transfers become so attractive, because most of them are already well along in their development. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of Power 5 schools, a lot of top tier elite schools taking transfers now, when they used to just pluck the best high school kids in the country. But you're seeing the really good schools fill out their rosters with transfers, guys who've already established themselves in college. And I think that's the reason why, because you never know how that development is going to go. You see a guy like Jalen Huccifino got better all season. Pretty much. He had his ups and downs late in the season, but that's a guy who vastly improved. That was great development. You've seen a guy like Malik Renew went through a really down period during the middle of the season, really stepped it up towards the end of the season. Looks like he's going to be a great, great player going in next year. Then on the flip side, you see the guys who didn't. And those guys who didn't are out. And so, again, just I think we get really caught up in recruiting wins and losses, when it's more than that. It's also development wins and losses that mean just as much as landing the player. So I think that came into focus this week with these transfers. It's all about development as well as it is getting the player.
Yep. Well said. And certainly a lot of our show tonight will be dedicated to a variety, looking at some of that from a variety of angles. So We're heavily in the off season at this point, and a lot of those kinds of things here. But before we do that, let's talk about what we got in store this week. We'll hit some Hoosier headlines and some other Big Ten headlines in the first segment. Second one, we'll talk a little bit more about Peyton Sparks. We get Ryan's thoughts and scouting report, and we kind of lumped in a whole bunch of other questions that we're getting on a lot of the hot names, at least in the IU sphere as it pertains to the transfer portal. So we'll answer some of those, and then we've got a whole bunch of other questions as well, so we'll try to hit as many of those as we can in the mailbag. So all that will be coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio, but first let's talk about our presenting sponsor. And this edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more. Bottom line is that Home Field is something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And they keep adding more. They added the FAU collection as they move on to the Final Four. They added the Fairleigh Dickinson collection, of which I am told my shirt is en route and may arrive tomorrow. And so, you know, as many schools as they have, they just keep looking for more, finding new relevant schools and happenings to get more into their portfolio. But no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelley School of Business. And what could be better than that? We've talked about here many times. Coach has a variety of options. I wore my Georgia State sweatshirt the other day. Always a good conversation piece when you have random schools. And I feel like I probably have more random schools than mainstream schools. But all comfortable. Excited to throw that on every time that I can. So go to homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code HOME to get 15% off your entire first order. Again, that's promo code HOME for 15% off. And once again, that website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, gents. So who's your headlines? Transfer news. Ryan alluded to these. So Tamar Bates, Logan Duncombe, Jordan Geronimo, all leaving the IU program at this point. I think with any of those, you know, especially with Tamar, I think it changes. It might be one of those cases where a change of scenery is a good thing in that case. For all three. Yeah, I think you can make the argument for all of them. You know, I know Tamar just had some, you know, up and down moments, which show some flashes of what got everybody so excited about him. But I think, you know, felt some of that pressure to be able, you know, be the guy and step into some of those situations. And I think maybe a fresh start someplace else might be a good thing for him. And as you said, probably a good thing for all three. You conducted a Zoom meeting with Caden Shedrick of Virginia today. We have some other questions about him. They've also had meetings with Battle, Timberlake, Ludlam. Caleb Love's name has popped up a whole bunch lately. So IU just involved with a number of guys, which I think is exactly what you would expect at this point in the process. And like I said, we've got a whole bunch more questions about those guys, so I won't throw it to you guys for any specific thoughts on those at the moment. Around the Big Ten, this list is probably outdated as soon as it's done, but you've got at Illinois, you got Coleman Hawkins testing the NBA draft waters, Jaden Epps transferring, which was kind of surprising. I felt like he had really shown some great development over the course of the season, worked his way into a bigger role. So I was a little bit surprised by that one. Filing under things I was not surprised by, Jet Howard going pro, Bryce Sensabaugh going to the NBA, Cliff Omorui going to the NBA. So a few guys going to the pro ranks. And then coaching news, Penn State hired their Mike Shrewsbury replacement. Mike Rhodes comes in from VCU, kind of along that line of the, you know, I think it went Shaka Smart to Will Wade to Mike Rhodes at VCU. So be interested to see what kind of style, if he brings that similar style to Happy Valley or if he does something else. I think regardless, it's going to be quite a departure from what the fans there got accustomed to with Micah Shrewsbury in those two short years. But, you know, Coach, any of those, you know, Big Ten headlines really stand out to you as you think about what the league might look like next year, or even potentially any that we didn't mention in that rundown? Because, like I said, that stuff gets outdated pretty quickly these days.
Yeah, I think the Coleman Hawkins test in the NBA draft, I thought he was well thought of going into this year, and I didn't think he had a super great year. I think he's got maybe the athletic ability, but he was up and down. I'm not sure where that's going to end up. And Coach Underwood's struggling to keep guards. You know, he's had guards come in and out of that program, and that's why they weren't better than what they were this year, and Epps is an example of one of those. But, man, Howard and Sensabaugh, it was just unbelievable, better than I thought. I thought he was going to be good, but, boy, he can flat-out play, and I think he's got an NBA body, whether he's quick enough or not. But I think the pros will find a spot for them. And, you know, it's just interesting. No one really knows with the transfer portal what the conference or what the Indiana roster is going to be. You know, we talked about it in the emergency pod about having some patience. This doesn't happen just immediately. It does happen fast. It is speed dating. But having some patience till the roster is complete. I think you got to look at the league that way too. And then you just really don't know how some of these, you know, transfers come in. They turn out what you expect, and some come in and they don't end up, you know, producing as thought, or an injury in the case of the Michigan Llewellyn kid at Michigan. So it's just an interesting time, and the college landscape has changed so much from just being going to the Peach Jam and watching your recruits coming in and getting the occasional transfer who will have to sit out for a year. It's just total, you know, free agency. And so for those of us who are a little bit older, it's hard to deal with, but it allows Indiana to rebuild faster. And ultimately that makes this guy happy. So just going to be interesting to see all the pieces and how they move and how the coaches adjust going forward.
And Ryan, before I throw it to you to go back to the first guy that Coach mentioned, yeah, Coleman Hawkins thing is interesting. I think a lot of athletic talent, intriguing size and skill set. I thought the biggest thing that he struggled with this year was just decision making, shot selection, those kinds of things. Would make just absolute wow plays and then just make you really scratch your head one moment to the next. So be interested to see, you know, there's a lot of upside to like for the NBA with a guy like that. And you wonder a little bit, in his scenario, is that who he is? And he's not going to be able to kind of turn around some of the perception of the negative things about him going out. So you just go ahead and do it. Be interested to see as you look at guys testing the waters. But Ryan, thoughts on him or any other Big Ten movement this week?
Yeah, I think a couple times this year, Andy, you and I texted back and forth, just like the gulf between talent and performance is wider for Coleman Hawkins than anybody in the nation. And that's you know, it's not that he's awful. It's that he's very highly talented and skilled, or at least, you know, has the potential to be that skilled. I mean, that poster he put on TJD this year is something I still think about. Like, I mean, it was just an insane move, and you just didn't see enough of that. But he can stretch the floor. He's quick enough to drive. He could post up if he needs to. He's a very talented young man. I think the testing the NBA draft, I think he's going to go to the combine and just see what people say. And, you know, maybe he shows up and is just has a great week, and he gets a, you know, high second round, late first round promise and goes. He seems like the kind of guy that a contender could stash on the bench and maybe a little G League for a year or two, develop him in their system, and then bring him on and have him be a talented guy. But the other thing is, when guys do struggle with their decision-making like that, coming back for another year and putting more bad film together can actually kill your draft stock, as opposed to, and you think about it as like, well, you could build, but also scouts get to pick you apart more. And that's why someone like Jalen Huccifino, while I would love for Jalen to come back to Indiana, play another season, he should not, because everybody already likes him. You come back, there's only one direction you can go, and that's down. And then there's also a new wave of guys who are only going to have 1 year of tape, where you're going to have two, and they're going to focus in on those bad games, not the good ones. So the longer you stay, the more you can get picked apart. And so I think with a guy like Hawkins, who clearly has an NBA body, NBA level skills, he just hasn't put it all together. If he can leave now and just get out, I think that that's probably the smart thing to do.
If you can, in the NBA, if you're liked and can get in and get developed, where you're working 24 hours a day with your NBA team or the G League, you know, the question is, can you get that late first round? Can you get some money?
Yeah, get the guaranteed contract.
Do you get the right amount of money? But it's actually kind of better to get ready for the NBA game to be in that NBA-type development system, I think, for those guys on that fringe. But I don't know that he's even that, to be honest.
It could be he goes to the combine and they're just like, you're not ready, you know. Yeah. Or he could just, if he has a great run in the 5-on-5 portion, you know, because he's going to test well. If he has good run in the 5-on-5 portions and you know, the head-to-head stuff, you know, it could be the kind of thing where one team falls in love with his ability. That's all you need. All you need is one of those teams to be like, we want him. And that's kind of what Trace was hoping for last year, is that some team would watch him and say, we think we can turn this guy into an NBA player. And so there's no downside for these guys who have a chance at the NBA.
They might as well go.
Going to the combine and trying it out. Yeah.
Yeah. You show up, shoot the ball well, and, you know, who knows?
Who knows what can happen?
Yeah. One other quick thing, just for those looking for content to consume, really enjoyed the Miller Kopp interview with Derek Elston and Christian Watford on their show. I thought he, you know, it was only about a half hour or so, but just kind of insightful as to what, you know, his couple years at IU look like. Gave some good insight into the program, into Woodson and some of those things. Just find him to be a pretty engaging guy. Just seems like a good dude. So for those looking for something to listen to on a walk as the weather gets nicer, we definitely encourage you to check that out. But all right, coming up on Assembly Call Radio, we are going to talk about IU's newest commitment in Peyton Sparks. I know Coach and Jared got on a bit yesterday. I think it was yesterday. And talked about him, as well as our friend Evan Wilson. So but we'll let Ryan go in a little bit more depth and talk about that. And then we'll hit some of the other transfer names to know. That's all next here on the Assembly Call. Stick with us.
So, Andy, just to drive you nuts, you know who the third highest paid player on the Reds is?
Ken Griffey Jr. Yep. Is it possible he could do better than the guy who started in the outfield?
Probably.
Today, went 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts? You bet it is. Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about the Logan Duncombe thing a little bit, because people were questioning like why they would let him go given his relative talent and, you know, all that stuff. A couple weeks ago in the chat, I kind of let it know that look, somebody asked when Logan was going to be back, and I kind of said never. And somebody said, well, this year or ever? And I said, ever. But this year, and yeah, I knew that he was going to get that sinus surgery and was done for the year at that point. This is probably early February I said this. But also, there was some stuff behind the scenes with Logan that at that point, probably around December, I think I was starting to hear that he's just not going to be back. And I'm not going to go into details on what it is, because that's his stuff. And, you know, if one of the beat writers wants to dive in on that, that's their business. But, you know, this was something that was telegraphed for quite a long time. I think you guys can confirm, when we were in Bloomington, everybody was talking about it, that, oh yeah, he's gone. You know, it's not a big deal. And it just, I will say this, I just don't think it was a fit on or off the court for Logan at IU, and for IU to Logan. So that's kind of what happened there. And sometimes that happens. Kids get on campus and it just isn't a great fit. And that's what happened here. And yeah, it was known for quite a while that was going to be the outcome of this. And wish him well. I, you know, have nothing against Logan Duncombe. But yeah, it just wasn't a great situation for everybody involved. So that's what, I mean, I think all of us knew at that point. And I did see that when I made those comments, it wound up on Peegs, and we love Peegs. But some of the comments were actually hilarious. Like, I legitimately, I think one of them said, Ryan Phillips says a lot of things. Most of them are like BS or something like that. I legitimately laughed out loud. I thought that was a really funny, comment. So I would have commented on it, but I subscribed to the USC 24/7 site, and I thought that gave me privileges on all of them. Apparently it does not. So I got to figure that out. But I don't style myself as an insider with quotes around it, but there's plenty of those in the IU sphere. But we've done a show, you know, about IU basketball for 12 seasons, people reach out to us, talk to us. We know people. I mean, we do hear things, and occasionally if I think it's adding to the conversation, I'll drop it in there. But as far as details go, again, the guys who cover the team directly every day can fill those in if they want to.
I'm sorry.
I want to apologize for what I wrote in there. I was under the impression, as you said, that you only had access to the USC one, and that would not find its way back to you. So that's my fault for not
somebody sent me like, actually, I can view it. I can view it because I'm inside, but I can't comment. It's weird. I don't know what the
man. I really wish I'd known that before I wrote this.
Andy, we need to look into that for the show, where he can listen but he can't comment. That would be a segment. You know,
but also want to say about the guys who do cover the beats, like, you know, Rab Johns, Alex and Zach Osterman, like, we love those guys. They're great. They all do a great job. So, yeah, like it is funny when someone's like, oh my God, they're talking about you on Peaks. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, you know, it's we don't have anything against that.
Ryan's been talking about a variety of platforms this week.
Platforms this week. Yeah. Some former, a former player was not too thrilled with me. That was interesting.
Yeah, what are you going to do? All right. You guys ready to talk? Yeah,
let's do it.
A little more sparks and a lot of portal questions.
All right. Here we go.
All right.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
All right, welcome back to The Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Ryan Phillips and the coach Brian Tonsoni, and wanted to dedicate this segment to a new Hoosier and a number of potential new Hoosiers, I guess you could say. So let's talk Peyton Sparks first. Coach, like I said, you and Jared were on. We had our MAC correspondent, Evan Wilson from Akron, on yesterday, who did a good job giving people kind of his impressions of Peyton from having played against him in the conference. But Ryan, I mean, what are your initial thoughts and impressions of Peyton Sparks and kind of how he fits into what IU does? Obviously, that part is a bit of a difficult question to answer without seeing the full roster. Yeah. But what do you think he really brings to the table for this team?
Well, I think that it's clear to everyone he's coming in to come off the bench. You know, he's not going to be your Trace Jackson Davis replacement. He's not going to be a starter. He is a really good rebounder, and at least at that level. We don't know really how he does against power five competition, because Ball State didn't really play anybody this year, play any big time games. But he's a big dude at six. I mean, he's undersized height wise for a center at 6'9". But he's 240. He's a legit 245 pounds. He's a big dude. And so I think I've been kind of looking at this as a Logan Duncombe replacement coming off the bench. You know, you were thinking heading into next year, Malik Renew's your starting post, and then probably Logan Duncombe's your bench guy, if this is, we're projecting this out from last year. So I think he kind of comes in, is going to fill that role. He's a kid who really wants to play at IU. Like, I mean, and I love that about him. He's a lefty, which of course he is, because he's an IU post guy. You have to be a lefty. You are not allowed on campus as a post guy unless you're a lefty, apparently. He's not super quick. He struggles with lateral movement, and defensively he's a little bit slow. He is a straight post-up guy and a straight post-up defender. Not really a shot blocker, but he's a great rebounder, really good offensive rebounder. He gets to the line a lot. It's a little alarming that his free throw percentage dropped from 70% to 52% this year. And he shot about the same number average per game. So I'm interested to see what's up there, if it was something mechanical or if, you know, maybe a nagging injury or something. He put up good numbers this year for his conference, but he's not going to do that in the Big Ten. I think what's interesting is the way he was used was a lot of ball screen, kind of like Indiana would use Trace Jackson Davis. The difference is he's not as fluid or as quick as Trace Jackson Davis. So I think this is going to be ball screen and then just roll every single time straight in a straight line, as opposed to getting it high post and, you know, moving with a dribble or anything like that. His field goal percentage did go up this year as well. So again, he's takes all of his shots from inside and is pretty good at making them. And he's got some size. And I think that if you're looking at him strictly as a deep backup, not deep backup, but like your eighth man coming off the bench to absorb some fouls, draw some fouls, get some quick points in the paint, he's got experience and he's big, and that'll work in the Big Ten. So again, if you're looking at this as strictly a bench signing, he's not the kind of big man that Mike Woodson has intimated that he would like, you know, a guy who can go out on the floor, handle the ball, do things like that, more of a modern big man. He is not that, but he's a kid who really wants to be at IU. I am told they have informed him straight up of what his role is. Like, hey, you earn your way into the starting lineup if you can, but you're coming to be this, you know, a backup. And he has accepted that and is willing to play just to get the chance to play at IU. So we'll see how he does. We'll see how he develops, you know, this offseason. That'll be big, and see if, you know, being in the strength program can get him a little bit quicker, can unlock a little more athleticism. But yeah, I think he profiles as a solid backup straight center. He's not going to be a guy who's stretching the floor or moving out, handling the ball out top like a Race Thompson did this year or anything like that. He is going to be a straight back to the basket player, and defensively, he's not going to be guarding guards on the perimeter. And if he is, Indiana's in trouble.
Yeah. So question, I'll throw this to you first, coach. Just, I like to think of these things in somewhat simple terms. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions. So the first one is, you know, what do you think he's going to struggle with the most as he moves up in competition from a conference standpoint, or things he might struggle in that IU wants to do schematically? So what are, you know, an area or two, coach, that you know, think will be an adjustment for him moving up?
I think defensively, away from the basket, a lot of that is asked in the Big Ten, with whether it's your ball screen coverages. So Coach Woodson's going to develop what coverages does he want to execute. He was able to switch a lot last year because of the athleticism of Race and Trace. I don't know that Peyton can do that as of yet. So there's going to be some adjustments possibly there. That you always wonder. I do think he'll be able to get fouled and get some shots up because of the way he uses his body, his thickness. I really like the way he hits the chest of the defender, and that creates a little separation for him to get his shot off. And he needs to do that because he's not a Trace Jackson Davis that we're used to skying above people or going around people. He's got to kind of go through people. And if you have that knack, I think that translates, even though you might play against some taller guys in the Big Ten. But maybe that would be an issue that, you know, he scored 13.5 points in the MAC. I don't know that point production is there, probably – because of minutes, but also who he's going up against. But the nice thing about that is I don't know that he'll get double teamed much, and I think he has some ability. You know, Evan said he needs to work on his footwork and going to his right hand, but I saw a video of him going, he's not afraid to go to that right hand. So those are some things that obviously at this level to be successful. I think rebounding, you can translates really well because it's heart and mind and knocking someone away from the basket and then going and getting. I think that's not going to be the negative. I think it's going to be defensively outside of the post as needed in the Big Ten would be my major concern.
Yeah, Ryan, thoughts on maybe what some of his biggest challenges are going to be adjusting?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Coach nailed it. It's the defense on the perimeter. I think you're right, Coach. I don't think he'll face double teams in the post because hopefully Indiana has a couple shot makers around him that makes it easier as well. But, you know, if you can get away with him being on the floor defensively for 10, 15, 17 minutes a game over the course of the year, you're probably happy with it. But they are going to put him, teams are going to put him in a lot of switches to get, you know, a smaller guard or a scoring guard on him. And so Indiana's going to have to fight through that, and they're not going to be able to switch off him, and it's going to leave guys open if you do that off a ball screen. So ball screen coverage is going to be a big problem. I think that he's going to have to play drop coverage, as Coach and I talked about, you know, earlier. I think that he's going to have to play drop coverage and go below the screens, and that's going to leave Indiana vulnerable. That said, if you feel like the payoff of having five extra big body fouls and, you know, some scoring ability and some rebounding ability in the post is worth that trade-off, then he's a good pickup. I mean, again, it's strengthening the bench. That's what this is. And Indiana at the end of the year was going seven deep, you know, and they need to be 8, 9, 10 deep where you don't have to use all 10, but you can if you need to. And so where you saw, you know, it was funny. You wouldn't see Caleb Banks for like four games. And then he'd come in and play 10 minutes. You're like, where'd that come from? You know, I mean, you have to have the ability to have those guys who can actually help out, especially, you know, at the end of the season, you see guys get worn down. I think that basketball is moving, especially college basketball, is moving to a situation where for most of the year, you're playing more players. Now, you might narrow it down in the tournament, in a tournament setting, but most of the year, you're starting to see teams play more players because they play a lot more games than they used to. And you're playing 40-minute games now where there's no relaxation on either end of the ball. The games are more up-tempo, all of that. So I just think that we have to continue to alter our mindset of how many minutes each guy should be playing. It's a different game than it was 10 years ago. It's a different game than it was 20 years ago.
Ryan, you mentioned something. You know, what did Banks do so well that got him some time? He played that energy role. You know,
yep.
Getting offensive rebounds, tips, diving on the floor. Well, this kid has a passion. Evan from Akron, passion. Then I read articles about coaches talking about his passion. You know, that's an underrated skill coming off the bench. You know,
the assembly call.
You get off to a slow start and you bring someone in there that's, you know, running around and knocking people down and getting rebounds or offensive rebounds. That's an ability too that can be a strength that overcomes some of the issues out on the floor defensively or the undersized height wise that a lot of people maybe looking at. You can't underestimate what that is. That's why we like Trey Galloway coming off the bench. You know, you some of your bench guys have to be those high energy guys to fill in and to pick up the starting unit if there's time struggling. I think this guy's going to be someone that Indiana fans are going to like in that role.
Yeah, Ryan, that was where I was going to go next. You guys have touched on a lot of these. You know, I think of it in two questions. What are things that may not translate, and then what are things that will? You know, Coach mentioned the rebounding. I think the passion, effort kind of stuff certainly stands out from everything I've, you know, seen, read. Anything else from your perspective, you something that you feel like he's able to translate really well and be able to step in and provide right away?
It sounds simple, but his size and strength. I mean, those things travel. You know, he's 6'9", he's got some long arms, you know, and he's big. He's not easy to move. He's 245 pounds and he's built. You know, this isn't Trace, where Trace was probably at some points down to like 225 because of how quick he was, and that actually helped him this year. But he's a solid 245, and that's tough to move. And so you're going to get him hanging on, you know, opposing post players and wearing them down. I think that's the one thing that travels. As far as skills go, he's a pretty good finisher. And again, against more skilled defenders, maybe that doesn't translate. You never really know until you put a guy up against top tier defenders or offensive players, how they're going to play. And again, Ball State didn't really play anybody this year. So that you could, you know, one-to-one give a matchup to Team Indiana would play or something. So, I do think his finishing ability and, as Coach mentioned, the rebounding and effort are things that he'll bring that'll travel anywhere, and you can put those in a suitcase and take them anywhere in the country. So, positives there. And here's the other thing. He'll be a guy that's that size bothering Malik Renew in practice. So that's, you know, putting him up against a bigger guy, not a whole lot bigger, but bigger size-wise. And I think that'll be good for Malik, especially a veteran guy. He's, you know, he's 2 years as a starter, basically. So
one intangible thing comes from Winchester, Indiana, the home of Wick's Pies. I will tell you that my grandpa, a fine connoisseur of all desserts, loved Wick's Pies and we'd make the drive up from we'd make the drive up from Richmond to Winchester and grab some pie. He was it was not a dessert that man would turn down, but he loved some Wick's Pies. So anyway, all right. So let's talk about other names in the transfer portal. I've seen Caleb Love's name mentioned in the chat. His name was featured prominently among some of the questions. And so seems like there's some mutual interest there, at least based on what people have said. I thought Jonathan framed this up well. This is we've had some conversation about this on text today, so we might rehash some things from that perspective. But he said, obviously, we'll spin any commitment into the brightest possible outlook, or at least Jared will. That parenthetical part was mine, not anybody else's. After all, we're actual fans, not radio hosts clinging onto their careers. Shots fired at someone certainly there. What do you think of the mutual interest between IU and Caleb Love? Maybe do it debate style. Ryan takes a negative spin. Shocking. Coach takes the positive, and I take the reasonable middle ground. So lots been talked about with Caleb Love. Coach, I'll let you go first. Make the case, I guess, for you know, bringing in Caleb Love, based on, you know, kind of his, to put it in bracketology terms, his full body of work, if you will, over the course of his career.
Talent. Very talented player in the portal, and you need talent to compete in the tournament. We saw the fact that you need guards, and you need dudes. And he is a guy that, when he's playing well, can fill it up. We already know he's a shot taker from watching him this year. There's a lot of – he's not afraid to take shots. So the thing is, you know, a lot of us see that North Carolina was the number one team, didn't make the tournament. We heard a lot about the some selfishness and stuff like that. And we really don't know what went on. Obviously, when you see Davis and Bacot coming back and then Love leaving, you kind of jump to the conclusion that Love was part of the problem there and the volume of shots. But the guy can play. The guy has an NBA-type game. I'm not saying he's going to make the NBA, but you don't find that an awful lot. You know that he's capable of playing in the NCAA tournament and playing at a high level. And if you're trying to bridge the gap between now and when the 24 and 25 classes come in, where you feel like you've got some leeway or you've done some work and you have him for a year, you bring a guy in like that. And Coach Woodson from the NBA may have the recipe to talk and have a conversation with the young man, Kenya Hunter, Coach Ya, and try to be a voice of reason. I thought they did that with X, who came with some baggage from Pittsburgh with technical fouls. And throughout that first year that X had, X finished the year playing fantastic. So, you know, I think some of the strengths of Coach Woodson is he's an honest, straightforward guy. We just heard it with what Peyton Sparks was told. You know, you're coming in and you got to work for your minutes. I think Coach Woodson saying, you know, I'm here to help Indiana win. I think you can help us win, but you're going to have to do it the way that we do it here if you want to come here. I really believe that Coach Woodson has that ability. I think he's an honest dude with his players. I think players respect that. And if that can be the difference in clearing up whatever the issues were, if there were issues, I think that's going to be a good thing.
All right. So, Ryan, I know this is really going to test your acting chops here, but try to take the negative side of this. Why might this not be a good idea?
I think it's a great, no. look, I question the fit to some degree, especially if you're bringing Xavier Johnson back, because Love is a guy who needs the ball in his hands the way he plays. So for Love to be successful at Indiana, he would need to completely change his game. He's not going to be a shot hunter where he can just dribble the ball for 15 seconds, find a shot, and chuck it. I mean, the problem with Love this year was he took a lot of bad shots. He would just basically hold on to the ball and then fire something up late shot clock. He finished shooting 37.8% from the field. He finished 29.9% from three. And from the field, he shot 15.1 shots per game. That's not Indiana. That's not what is going to happen in Indiana. And so if he's willing to completely change his game and share the ball and run an offense and not just basically try and play hero ball, then maybe it fits. Maybe it works because he's a dude. I mean, the coach said that. We were texting back and forth the other day. Coach is like, he's a dude, though. He's talented. He has an NBA type game. He does. He needs to harness it and use it efficiently, not in this crazy chuck the ball up way. I watched them play this year. I think they were playing Duke. And I watched him a couple times. I think the Duke game is where it came to me. And I was just like, he's a more talented Devontae Green on a bad day. Like, that's what it felt like. Like, he was just hunting his shot. Didn't matter the situation. He's going to put it up. And guys like that are tough to play with. And guys don't like playing with guys like that. Guys like playing with guys who are willing to facilitate for them as well and willing to share the ball. And so maybe Caleb Love comes to a new situation, completely turns over a new leaf, and is different and is willing to be a backcourt partner with Xavier Johnson, let Xavier handle the ball more and just be the guy coming off the screens and driving and off the wing or whatever. But I don't see this version of Caleb Love this year as a positive addition to Indiana. If he's willing to change, great. If he's willing to change his game and fit in, great. But the current version that I saw this year, I'm not terribly interested in.
Yeah. So as I am now tasked with trying to piece all that together into a, you know, more of a middle ground argument, I think I think you guys both articulated the positives and the negatives, the risks and the rewards really well. You know, the positive side is you've got a guy who excelled on the big stage in the tournament last year, wasn't afraid to take big shots. Maybe that led to him taking some of the shots that he took this year. Seemed like there was just a lot going on with that North Carolina team this year. I think even at times, you know, last year they were better when the ball was in RJ Davis's hands. So the question becomes the flip side of it. And this is really as a coaching staff and as a program, they have to figure out, does this guy take accountability for his role and where things went, or does he think he wasn't the problem? And does he have the, you know, kind of self-awareness or whatever you want to say to understand that he needs to make changes and try to figure that out? I think the fit with him next is a little bit odd for sure. He wouldn't be and shouldn't be the guy with the ball in his hands for a significant period of time. But for a team that has lost a ton of scoring and has to find ways to get the ball in the basket, there's parts of him that are intriguing. But I think the assessment there is based almost entirely on things that we can't see and hear. And that's really an understanding from him of, you know, similar to the Peyton Sparks thing. Look, you're taking a role on this team. Are you comfortable with that? In the case of Peyton Sparks, guy loves IU, wants to be here, was more than willing to sign up for the role that was discussed. We don't know that about Caleb Love. And I think that's really ultimately what it comes down to for me, is that the things that you that might reassure you are things we're not going to know and we're not going to hear. So you really got to trust that the staff is doing their due diligence and having the right conversations and think the right things about him from a character perspective, that figure out whether he can rein things in and really, you know, have the self-awareness to change what he's doing and to play in that way. And that's where it gets difficult. And I guess that's why it's somewhat easy to take the middle ground, because it's very easy to see the very extreme on either side of it. And you kind of balance it out in the middle and what can you get out of him?
Yeah. One more thing on Love. I think that on paper, you look at him, just his ability, and you're like, he's a take. No question. He's a take. But when you look at his game deeper and you watch the way he played this year specifically, it's tough to make the argument that he's a good addition. Now, again, we don't know if he's willing to humble himself and be like, yeah, no, I want to be part of a team. This is a unique situation at UNC. I felt like I was forced into that role, like whatever, fine. But the guy he was this year, I don't think is something this program needs. But man, you look at him, you look at his high school film, you look at his talent. I mean, he's a legit guy. And so it's really tough. You're right. I think the extremes on either side, you can make a case both ways very clearly. It just depends which guy you get, honestly. And we won't know if he does come to Indiana, you won't know which guy you're getting until October. So
I'm taking off my hat of the question, because initially I felt exactly like all of you, very questionable. The ball stopped. He just took deep threes. It wasn't in the flow of the offense, but you also got to question the North Carolina coaching staff. Like, why did you let it happen the whole time?
Yep.
Like,
we don't know how much of that was North Carolina. Yeah, how much of it was Caleb?
Is it the coach that just said, "Okay, you know, Caleb, you can do whatever you want," and then, you know, it didn't work out. And that's where, if this is an option, then Woodson's got his work cut out for him to make sure that he's not that, you know, ball stopping dribbler that just takes shots. But the other thing is that why Caleb Love would want to come here is because Woodson doesn't mind volume shooters for his best two players. He's going to pick his best two players and let them shoot. He let Hood Schifino shoot. He let Trace Jackson Davis shoot. So that could be a fit. But I think the difference, I believe in Woodson off the court talking to players. I just think you can't deny the growth of X from a kid who was uncontrolled, got some technicals, and I know he had a couple of the Xavier bullcrap and all that stuff, but X really grew as a player under Coach Woodson and Hunter and those guys. And so the track record, and I know you can go to Tamar and Logan who did not, but every coach is going to have some wins and some losses. But there is a young man that the same kind of baggage was mentally not tough enough, you know, was selfish, and I thought played well. And so that's where you do take that chance. But, yes, he did not – the Caleb Love this year, not not something we want in Indiana. And the other comment is, too, is if you only bring in culture guys, you're going to get beat in this first or second round.
Yeah, you don't have talent.
You got to have dudes, and sometimes you got to take that flip of the coin. Like, is this dude going to come in and buy into what Coach Woodson's selling, or is he going to come in and dribble for 20 seconds and launch a 27-footer and kill the whole vibe? You've got to take the risk at some point with talented guys because we didn't have enough of them in this year's tournament. No. So I'm kind of coming around to it a little bit, but I was, like you guys, very questionable.
One thing to remember is you remember how great X was at the end of his first year at IU. But you'll also remember that for three quarters of that season, he was driving us crazy. Now, right. That's the risk you run, bringing in a guy like that and trying to bring him. Now, he did develop under Woodson. There's no question. He actually started out this year kind of up and down, too. And we were kind of like, was that just a good run? Or is it, you know, but but at least he was bringing in on defense. He felt like he was just working to fit in with Huchefino and all that. But it did take a while. It wasn't an overnight transformation for X. And so if Caleb Love does come, I don't expect it to be clean right away. I expect it to take some time. So, yeah, I think you can make the argument either way pretty evenly, I think. And it's really going to depend on the player and the coaches. I mean, that's like everything. It's going to depend on what the players and the player and the coaches do and how they position him to succeed best at Indiana.
All right, so next question. This hits on a handful of the guys. So I'm assuming somebody's going to mention that one that we haven't talked about as much here. So Trevor sent in a question. Timberlake, Love, Battle, Shedrick, Ledlam. If you had your choice of bringing in two of the five, which two would it be? Coach?
All of them. Don't we need five spots still? I mean, we need a roster. I think
six? That's realistic. So
no, but we have six guys, right? Are seven? How many spots do we have open?
I don't know.
Right, I think there's only like four left, right?
Yeah, I think five? There's four.
With Sparks, well, Geronimo leaving. Okay, so there's four.
All right. Well, for the purposes of this question, Coach, I'm going to need you to follow the directions. He asked for two. Who are your top two? If you want to throw in who you'd rank third, then I will allow you that leeway.
I think with Sparks and Renew, I would be okay with them playing to five. So that would keep me off the Shedrick guy because, you know, I would say Timberlake and Battle.
Wait your turn.
Timberlake and Battle. Timberlake to shoot. Battle. I've already said to shoot as well from the four. That's hard because I think the Shedrick guy could play some defense, would probably be in there. I think you need two posts and two wings. Out of the four, so you had me pick one, and the four would be Battle and Timberlake, but that's tough because you're going to have to go out and get another post player anyway.
All right, okay. Ryan, what about you?
I would go with you.
Had a visible reaction when Shedrick was mentioned, and that was the one that they had the Zoom call. It seems like there's a lot of smoke there, at least initially. Give your quick thoughts on him since he seems to be one of the guys that you want to talk about.
I mean, they've been eyeing Shedrick for a while. I think that some people thought that he would be gone from Virginia months ago. Kenya has a connection there. I think that they've been eyeing him for a long time. He, honestly, on my list, probably number one, because they have no rim protection next year. None. And I think that Malik Renew, they want to get him to the NBA. I think they're going to work all offseason on getting him in better shape and getting him out on the perimeter a little more. He can shoot a little bit. He hasn't gotten there yet, but you could see he wanted to take some threes. He wanted to stretch it a little bit. I don't know if they do two bigs or what. I don't know how they would run it, but I think that we need rim protection badly, especially in this conference. And so you need length. And the other thing about Shedrick is he can move. He can be out on the perimeter. He can run. He's a good finisher around the rim. He has the makings of a good shot, even though he's 6'11". Like, I think that he is a guy that's a game changer for IU. He's not a plotting back to the basket guy. He's a guy who can move around and do some things. I think he'd be great for Indiana. Second for me, I'm torn between Timberlake and Ledlam. Timberlake, obviously, you lose Miller Kopp, you need shooting. And Ledlam actually has a really nice shot. He just only shot 29% from three. I don't know what the problem was there, but it doesn't look bad. But he's a scorer, and you're going to need a scorer too. If you don't get Love... Timberlake and Ledlam are hard for me to separate because you need both. You know, you need a wing scorer, but you also need a shooter. So
follow the directions. I had to follow the directions.
I know.
He got Shedrick and one more.
Let me say.
Everybody knew Ryan wasn't going to follow the directions.
Let me say Ledlam. I'll say Ledlam. I like.
There we go. All four, like I said to start out. Get all four of them.
I would say Shedrick and Ledlam. You've got some size there. You've got some length. I think Ledlam will be a better shooter next year. And I also, if this is the case, I'm banking on CJ Gunn shooting better next year. Trey Galloway's three-point shooting carrying over, and Xavier Johnson being able to shoot as well.
Banks, you know, can pop in a couple too. I would imagine.
Yeah, I think he will. He's gonna, I think he will too.
Banks and Gunn, we don't talk a lot now because all the new guys.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, they put in a good summer. You'll see some advancement in their game. And
I would
agree. That length that can guard and be energy guys and score. So,
well, CJ Gunn shot like 5% from three on the season, but he's got a really good shot. Like, it's just, I think it's just
not bashful.
Typical freshman, just too pumped up, overshooting when they come in. That happens to a lot of guys. It's just, it happened a ridiculous level to CJ this year. I think he only made, what, he make one all year or something? So yeah, I agree. I think he and Banks can both shoot it. I think they'll both develop. I don't think CJ is going to be Miller Kopp next year in mid-40s, but I think that it's going to be better, and I think that he'll develop.
Ryan, is Ledlam a three or a four?
He's listed as a four, but I think he's a three. He's got some length. He's about, he's somewhere between 6'6 and 6'8. Yeah, that's the question. And again, he put up those numbers in the Ivy League. You know, so there's going to be a drop off. But you've seen some Ivy League guys come to the Big Ten and play well. And so I don't know. I pencil him in as a three. And you're right about the quickness. That's the question. The quickness and the shooting are the question. It really is. But he's a guy who innately knows how to score. Indiana doesn't have a lot of those guys. So, and hasn't had a lot of those guys for a while from the perimeter, from the wing. So I like him a lot. But Timberlake, man, I love Timberlake's shot. So you notice how none of us said Caleb Love.
No. I didn't answer.
You didn't answer. Yeah. I didn't know you were going to answer. I thought you
I'm not going to, but I mean, I am going to answer. I'm not going to say Caleb Love, but you know, I just wanted to have the opportunity. Now I like Shedrick. I think the rim protection piece is pretty big. I think he's I hate to say versatile defender, but I think he allows you to do a lot of things defensively. I think there were many times arguments were made this year that he needed to play more at Virginia, which may have led to his ultimate departure. They played Vanderplas a lot, the transfer from OU, yep, who definitely was not the defender that Shedrick was. Yeah, you know, I think you look at it from a block percentage, you know, 10.5 block percentage, albeit in somewhat limited role, good on the offensive glass and the defensive glass. And I think a guy you don't necessarily need to like run a whole bunch of stuff for, but a guy you could is mobile enough to play in pick and roll situations. So I would say him, and then I'd probably go with Timberlake just because of the shooting. I think you got real questions.
You're two pure shooters. I mean, I'm not including Galloway in there because nobody would call his shot pure. But I mean, you know, Banks or Bates and Kopp are your two best pure shooters, and they're both gone. So
yeah, I mean, hope springs eternal this time of year, where everybody's going to think about all the great strides people can make in the offseason. I have no doubt that they will make some strides, but man, there's a void of shooting on this team. And so I think I think Timberlake fills that need a bit better than what Ledlam would. Gives up a small amount of size, but he would be the one that I would pick out of those. Battle would probably be next for me, I feel like, just because of the shooting. I mean, I fall back a lot on the shooting of this, of exactly what you said. They got to find people that are going to be able to space the floor. The two guys on this list who give you the best opportunity to do that are Timberlake and Battle, but I think Shedrick's what he allows you to do defensively, to me, kind of put it over the top.
He's a unique player that has a unique skill that is hard to replicate, in my opinion.
So,
and that skill is being very tall.
Yeah, it is hard to replicate. There's no doubt about it. So, all right, I think that hit most of the big names in the transfer portal. I'm sure there'll be a whole lot more to talk about next week when we do that, but we'll take a break now. We come back, we'll hit some other non-transfer related questions in the mailbag, and as always, we've got a bunch of great ones, so we'll answer as many as we can next. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call. I'm sure there'll be five new names to talk about next week, but
Xander Bogaerts,
they said
as a Padre
reached out to the Girard kid from Syracuse. I feel like that's a potential safety net if the waiver doesn't come through for X. That would be
that's
a
what
point
it
guard
like to me as well.
Option, but
yeah.
So
someone's asking if X will get a waiver. We don't know. I mean, it's up to the NCAA. He meets the requirements because Indiana played four games in the postseason. He meets the requirements, but they can reject it. I mean, they have to have a compelling reason to reject it, I believe. But, you know, usually if it's guys who get hurt early in the season, they let it go. If it's guys who are hurt all season and then come back towards the end or something like that and then, like, get hurt again towards the end, they look on that differently. But if they determine it was a season-ending injury, they're supposed to give it. And it did end his season. Whether they thought he could come back or not, it did end his season. So you would think so, and you would think it would be a pretty easy process. But you never know with the NCAA. I don't know if you guys have ever examined that. But the NCAA, not exactly consistent or...
That's jarring to hear. It's going to take me a minute to let that settle in.
By the way,
is it
very
a season-ending injury, or could they say that he could have come back? Therefore, it wasn't season injury. He decided
they have
not to.
It has
back.
To be a season-ending injury, and you're right. They could say, "Well,
so
he
he's
could
out
have come
there
back.
Warming There's, up and dunking in at the last
but
couple
I mean,
games." I know that doesn't mean
if,
that it's not.
Yeah, I don't know
he's
if
been
that
cleared
would,
or anything. But
contend. Yeah, I don't know if that would count because guys can practice if they're still injured. You know, and so that's why they have to fill out a form. They have to go. It's not that like they just say, "Hey, by the way, like he was, you know, he's out." Like they have to go through a process. It's not automatic like a regular red shirt. So who knows? We'll see. By the way, it's really funny. The Padres were supposed to start their game today at like 3:00, and they just delayed it yesterday until 6 because of rain in San Diego. They started the game. It is pouring right now. Absolutely pouring in the middle of a baseball game in San Diego.
Does it ever rain in San Diego?
This year it has rained a lot, which is good. We're in the middle of a severe drought. All of California is getting rain. It's great. But from early December until now, it's pretty much been in the 50s and raining consistently. And I'm kind of tired of it.
Ryan, I always think of you. I had a nice little dinner in Westfield, Indiana, and a relatively recent Italian restaurant, had some bolognese last night.
Good.
Nice glass
How was
of wine.
It
was good. Good meal. My son lives down there.
I still have to explore some of the new Italian spots in Bloomington when I go in the future. I haven't been to Osteria yet. I'm looking forward to it next time I go. I'm trying to stay a little bit longer and explore some of those restaurants. My parents love Uptown, so we always have to have dinner at Uptown while we're there. Mama Phillips is she's a huge, huge fan.
I was fortunate to have a pancake at the, the Village?
Village Deli?
Village Deli, yeah. Couldn't think of the name.
Oh, you mean the pancakes are the size of you?
It's like a manhole cover. Yeah.
Worth it. Worth the calories, 100%. All right, let's finish this off.
All right, I tried to put like maybe five or six toward the top, so I'll try to hit those. I drew a line that we can save some of the others for later or stuff we may have already answered a little bit.
All righty, here we go.
This is Tim Priller, and I never miss an episode of the Assembly Call.
All right, welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Coach Brian Tonsoni and Ryan Phillips. It's now time for our mailbag. Most of these questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. All right, guys, so I tried to pare the list down a little bit. A lot of them, as we mentioned, were about the portal-related things, but we'll hit a few more here before we wrap up this evening. Question from Jeffrey. Do you see any other current players leaving? Ryan, I'll throw this one to you.
No, I don't. I mean, the three that I thought would leave are gone. And I thought those would be the three that would go probably about 2 months ago. It seemed like that was that was the way things were going. I think Tamar was sort of a fence, could have gone either way at that point, but I thought Geronimo and Duncan would go. Current guys, I don't see anybody leaving. You know, yeah, it's hard to see anybody leaving at this point. I think they would have already been in. Because if you look at the guys who didn't play that have scholarships, it's Leo, who I think is a lifer in Bloomington, will stay. And then it's, you know, he's good in the locker room and all that stuff, and everybody likes him. Then it's Banks and Gunn, who both are really excited about their futures in Indiana. I think everybody's really excited about their futures in Indiana too. And so other than that, I don't see anybody who would go. And I mean, Malik's going to be a centerpiece next year. He knows it. I think that and Galloway is of course coming back. So yeah, I don't think anybody else is leaving.
Yeah. That was my gut reaction to the question, but I figured we would tackle it. All right, coach, I'll throw this one to you first from Alicia. What happened with Geronimo this season? Seemed like he played a stretch of games where he really contributed, brought energy off the bench. Then once Race came back, we hardly saw him again. Was bummed to hear he's in the transfer portal. What was your impression of maybe what changed, what went wrong for Geronimo this season as you now look at him moving in the transfer portal?
I think, well, one, injuries stopped any momentum he had when he played when Race was hurt. You know, he had a nice run at the end of last year, and then he had to play some when Race was there. But overall, Geronimo, it was just a fit. And it's nothing against Jordan. He's a vertical athlete who's playing basketball. His skills were going to get in rebounds, blocking shots, and dunking the basketball. And there's a place for that in some college programs. It's just not going to work in the Big Ten. His shot came and went. His ball handling never progressed. He wanted to move from the four to the three, and he really never had those perimeter skills. He never really developed a shot like Copps, where he could just sit out there and be a 40% 3-point shooter. And the game of basketball was a struggle for him from a strategy standpoint or a basketball IQ. There are a lot of times he was out of position offensively and defensively. I think other than the block shots and the rebounds, I think he oftentimes, it seemed to me, had missed assignments on defense. And as for a 3-year player, that's a struggle to see him contributing further if he stayed. I think he can go play some college basketball at the right fit on the right coach and be productive in a role that better fits and a school and a size of school that better fits his basketball ability. And we wish him nothing but the best. But that's what I saw. A great young guy that was just a not a good fit for a Big Ten school with the aspirations that Indiana has.
Yeah, Ryan, thoughts on Geronimo?
Yeah, I just think it was he never took that next step. We were all waiting for him to be we kept talking about, he's working on his shooting, he's working on being a jump shooter, you know, all that stuff. And you'd see, I mean, his form was fine. He just overshot the ball a lot and didn't trust his eyes and his brain and tried to put too much into it. And you'd see that on the free throw line, too. His first one was always long, and the second one was either perfect or short, just depending on how much he took off of it. So Jordan was a fun athlete to watch. I loved his personality, loved his attitude. He was just a pure energy guy. And he, you know, him being around over the last 2 years won some games for Indiana, I think. And, but I just think that with what Woodson wants to do with his players on the perimeter, Jordan's not a back to the basket center. And he doesn't handle the ball well enough to be a stretch four. He doesn't shoot it well enough to be a stretch four or a three. I just think he's an awkward fit. I think that he could go somewhere like a Ball State or something like that, be the best athlete in his conference and make things happen. One of my favorite lob targets in Indiana history, and favorite chase down block guys in Indiana history, but it just was not a fit and anymore. And he needed to take more of a step than he did. And it's a bummer because I really like Jordan. And I was really hoping that he would round into a better player from the wing, but it just didn't come. And that's a shame. Ton of potential. And I hope he realizes it somewhere else. I really do.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you guys said. I think the challenge for him was you look at him size wise and in the Big Ten, where is he going to play? Not you know, didn't shoot it well enough to really draw people out and be that stretch four. Had moments where he was able to do a lot of the little things. That was huge, you know, in the Big Ten tournament, in the game against Wyoming last year in the NCAA tournament. You know, that was kind of like his peak from an IU perspective. And a lot of that was just making athletic hustle plays that were out there. But as you looked forward to what he was going to be, you know, as I said, a little bit undersized and didn't shoot it well enough to be a true stretch four, wasn't a back to the basket guy. But then from the possibility to play the three and be a, you know, somebody in that mold, the shooting, that part becomes a little bit of a challenge there as well in terms of consistency of being able to make shots. And then the other was really the ball handling and being a threat in that regard. So I think that was, you know, ultimately the biggest challenges. But I think at the right level, the right program, he can absolutely be a contributor as you look at that. And sometimes it's just getting the right fit. Jerome Hunter, as an example, played a huge role for Xavier this year, especially after Fremantle got hurt. He was huge in their first round NCAA tournament game. And, you know, he'd certainly changed his game a little bit as well, but I think it was just getting to be in the right system and allowed him to showcase some of the things that people got excited about with him at IU. And hopefully the same thing can happen for Jordan as you go forward for him. From Greg, bracketology adjacent question: with the transfer portal causing so much turnover each season, do you think the committee should go back to giving more weight to the last 10 games of the season rather than equally weighting the entire body of work? How much of what happens in November is relevant in March once the team has had time to gel? Coach, I thought this was an interesting question from a bracketology perspective. So
I'll share that. You guys have fun with this.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I'll throw it to you first, Coach.
Yeah. You know, I do think there's a spot for how you're playing down the stretch without having a raw number of 10 or 12 games, because scheduling becomes an issue there. If your last four or five games are against top teams and you go 2 and 3 and then the raw number type of thing. But if you really truly want the best teams are the ones playing better in February. The question becomes, what's the metric to measure that if you do want to go to that? The other thing is that a lot of schools have to play to get into the tournament, if their conference isn't very strong, games in November that'll help them get into the tournament or build their resume. And it also, as we know, helps conferences. So Indiana playing the Kansas and Arizonas and the Big Ten playing those and winning some of those games helps set the tone. So November matters. I like the whole body of work. But I also think that there is something to say that teams sometimes, you know, if you lose a couple of games that you shouldn't in November, but you're playing well, and I do think the committee does have discussions that might incorporate that. We're not privy to them, and it's not hard data. But I do think that if your two bad losses are your first two games of the year and all of a sudden you've won 8 or 9 in a row, I think the committee's smart enough to at least – kind of understand that the transparency and the data and the metrics used to measure all of that creates a problem. But I do think in theory having the teams that are playing better down the stretch in better seeds is good for the game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you bring up a lot of good points, and also the way that you framed it underscores how difficult it would really be to do,
right?
Because you can't really dip your toe in, but at the same time, like, what metrics are you using to really say like that's important? Because it can't just be, oh, well, you were, you know, 8-2 in the last 10 games. Well, you know, some of these leagues play an unbalanced schedule. Who did you play in that stretch? You know, but then starting to get into like, oh, it's your record against this quadrant in these number of games or whatever. Like, it gets to be tricky. And at some point, your sample size within each of those buckets gets a little bit small. But I do think you see teams at some time, like Texas A&M was probably the best example of that this year, felt like they got penalized for a couple early losses from a seeding perspective. And yeah, those count, but they had a ton of new players and really like worked into form as they went on later in the season. And now by the same token, you could say, well, you know, their seed was probably right because they lost to, you know, 10 seed Penn State. You know, in the first round of the NCAA tournament, they were no match for booty ball. What are you going to do? But you can't, but at the same time, I'd probably say Penn State was underseeded at that point. They were really playing well. They had new pieces. They're continuing to figure out how to integrate some of those things. So I do think there's validity in it because I think sometimes teams get penalized for that and they get underseeded, and that doesn't really do anything for anybody either, you know, when it all boils down to it. So I think the challenge becomes how to fairly integrate that into the process. But I do think it's worth consideration with some of these teams, because you're either going to have teams not schedule well in the beginning of the season. And we got a scheduling question on IU coming up. You're going to have teams purposely not schedule well because you're trying not to set yourself up to take a loss while you're getting the pieces to fall into place, which isn't good for college basketball as a whole. So I think the alternative to that gets a little bit tricky, but I thought it's a really good question. I don't know the right answer other than I think it's probably foolish to ignore in some cases how these teams are playing. I think UConn, you could say the same thing. They had that lull in the middle of the season, really started to play well again at the end. End up being a four seed who's just absolutely steamrolling everybody. Should they have been a three? I you know, that's where I had them. So sure, I think they should have been a three. But you know, so I think there's some of those things. But an interesting question, an interesting dynamic of the way that the game's going for sure at this point. All right. Well, let's do that scheduling question next, because it's probably a good segue. Ryan, I'll throw this to you first. Patrick asked, what would you like to see in IU's 2023-24 non-conference schedule? Any rumors on what Coach Woodson's planning to do? I don't think there's much of anything in that regard, but what would you like to see, and kind of what are your key decision points for what you want to see this team do from a scheduling point of view?
I mean, I think doing things like playing Arizona, playing Kansas are great ideas, and playing them playing Arizona in Las Vegas was a great idea. Do it on a neutral floor, whatever. I wish the outcome would have been different, but I think that you need to do things like that to prepare yourself for the tournament. If you're not going to play in Maui, you're not going to play in Atlantis, you're not going to play in wherever, you need to get your kids out off campus and playing. Now, I know Indiana loves to play those games on campus because they love the paycheck that comes with them and the home attendance. But I think if you're going to prepare your guys for late in the season, you need to do what all these other big teams do, and that's play in places that don't look like your gym. And so, you know, that's why the Crossroads Classic, I mean, yeah, it's not at Assembly Hall, but it's a home game. You know, and so that's why that was, I thought, just kind of a lightweight thing to do. Indiana needs to start acting like the big boys, and they need to go to, you know, the bigger tournaments and playing the bigger opponents. It does help you down the stretch, and it doesn't hurt you. That's the other thing is from a bracketology standpoint, it doesn't hurt you to play a top tier team. If you play them well and you don't get absolutely annihilated, there's no way it's a bad thing. So, and if you win those games, it's great for you. IU's win over Xavier helped them all year, as Xavier played well. That helped them. And, you know, getting blown out at Kansas is rough, but, you know, they also played pretty tight against Arizona, had chances to beat them. You know, I think you need to do more of that. And I think that needs to be, whether it's two games a year or what, you need to play away from home and go see something else. And doing like a Vegas thing, doing something in New York where there's a lot of IU alums, wherever, do something different, get out of Bloomington.
Coach, any scheduling thoughts from you?
Well, from a bracketology standpoint, I agree with Ryan. I thought the schedule this year was good. I obviously you're losing the Big Ten ACC challenge, so there's a quality game that's not going to be on your schedule. You need to replace it with a quality game on your schedule. And I think, aren't they scheduled to play in New York in a four-team situation?
I think that's this year. I think you're right.
Yeah,
it's,
I think,
talked
it is.
About with Connecticut and maybe Texas, and I don't know.
You know, let's back out of that one, given what's going on
the
right
UConn,
now.
Feel it out, see what happens. Yeah, this I looked it up. So the only things known, at least I'm looking at Inside the Hall for this, 2023 Empire Classic with UConn, Louisville, and Texas.
Let's get Louisville.
One of those is not like the other. Why don't you?
Is that a tournament or just a two teams playing two back-to-back doubleheader?
I think it might be a tournament, but I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, and then they play Kansas at IU, obviously,
which will be a blast, man. And tickets now, folks.
You know, I might get some blowback on this too, but schedule some of those mid majors that are tough too.
Bring Michael Lewis in.
You need five or six games to get your stuff on film and get some wins and get people into Assembly Hall, but you don't have to play your tough teams, but also get a Ball State, get, you know, or something like that. I know it puts Indiana in a lose situation where, you know, you win, you're supposed to win. If you lose, I just think the overall strength of schedule was better this year. I'd like to see it stay this level or even get a little bit better moving forward.
Yeah, I think at the top end this year's was pretty good. I think there was a huge gap between the top teams they played and everybody else. I think Kennesaw State ended up being a lot better than people thought. So they were really the one, if I'm trying to think back to reviewing team sheets for every day for, you know, 2 months, but I think they were the one that was kind of in like the middle ground for IU where it was a decent win, wasn't a quad four. They might've been the only one that was that way. So I think it's trying to gravitate a little bit more toward getting a few of those ones in the middle and not necessarily saying, hey, I got to go have, you know, seven high end games. I think having, you know, four or five high end games like they had is fine. I just think you got to get kind of push some of the ones that are way at the low end of things toward the middle where you can. So, all right, next question. This one was given to just me. Sure to alienate someone here. This is from James. This is a question for Andy. Like it or not, the era of the transfer portal is here and the assembly call has had some departures. Coaches, this is all hypothetical, everyone. Calm down. Coach is transferring to a Notre Dame-focused podcast, which he's already assured us that he would not do. Ryan is leaving for a program where he can talk more and do even less work, which I just thought was a fantastic line. And Coach Adranya is leaving.
How is that possible?
Yeah.
Live
we
golf.
We don't know, but yeah. And Coach Adranya is leaving to get more minutes elsewhere. After debating moving on to a pro career, Jared will be back as well. If you had to rebuild the Assembly Call podcast roster from scratch this offseason using hosts of other podcasts or media people in general, who would you choose? And you can't choose other members of the Back Home Network like Galen or Scott. Okay. Man, I will admit that I did not put a ton of thought into this. I'll give a couple answers.
I got answer number one, but go ahead. I know it's for you only. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll let you give your answer here in a minute. The one, if I look at people covering the team, we're getting, you know, Jared and I were young. At this point, it's just Jared and I. We were young when, well, young-ish, younger when we started this. We got to get more youthful. So I think Tyler Tashman just does a fantastic job in a lot of the stuff that he does. So
is he good on the air?
I've heard him on with Zach at times. I think you got to get reps just like anybody else. Yep. So I think you can. But he's been on with Alex and been on with us a time or two and been on with Zach after some games. So yeah. I'll do that. And then I'll actually go with one outside of the IU sphere that I know that Jared would really buy into because, again, you know, we're all about, you know, cohesion and team chemistry here. He loves Brendan Quinn. Yeah. I, too, enjoy Brendan Quinn and found out through an Eagles podcast I listened to that they had Brendan on that he's also a big Eagles fan. So, you know, a little bit for
you
Jared,
just do that so you guys can hang out.
He likes, yeah. Oh, I mean, maybe. Who's to say? So those were at least a couple like very different names. One not really from the IU sphere. One very clearly from the IU sphere that I would do. You know, the other thing I would say is, you know, in starting to listen to some of the work that I mentioned earlier that Derek Elston and Christian Watford are doing. I know they had Jared on. And then they really stepped it up from a guest perspective right after Seriously. That to get Miller Kopp on. So I think they obviously bring a very unique perspective, even some of the stuff that they were talking about. Like on today's show, when they said in 4 years they never saw Tom Crean shoot a basketball, I about fell out of my chair, which is kind of been rumored that everybody said. But yeah. I just found it fantastic that they were like, yeah, he would kind of pull it back over his head, but then would never actually shoot. So I think they certainly would add a different perspective to the show. So I'll give you guys, if you want to throw in a person or two that you would think of.
I got two and I'm right. It's Mark
I
Titus.
Got two and I'm right.
Mark Great. Titus. And I would, again, Derek Elston. I think those are the two. The Tipton Tornado and Mark Titus are the guys I'd want.
I'm not sure we can afford Mark Titus, but that's a fine suggestion.
It'd be a side gig for him. He's going to make so much at Barstool. It'd be a fun side gig where you get to talk about IU. But no, if you're picking anybody, I think Titus's passion for IU is so fun, considering he didn't go there, but just because of how he grew up there. I think he's, you know, we love Mark. So I'd say, yeah, Titus and the Tipton Tornado.
Yeah. Coach, anybody about you?
No, because I don't want, you know, I'm recruiting them for the Notre Dame podcast. So if I give out names, you know, that hurts my negotiating, you know, tactics.
That's a wise move. All right. One more question and we'll wrap things up tonight. From Chuck, how can a coach put together a new team with 7 to 9 new players and make them a cohesive winning unit? Is that the $1 million question? The answer to the second question is that the $1 million question is 100% yes. But
you do it right.
But coach, from a, you know, what do you think is most important in that scenario? You're bringing in a whole bunch of new guys. What are, you know, one or two things that you think are absolutely critical to being able to find a way to make that work?
I think two things that Coach Woodson does best. I think he communicates the way he's feeling to his players and their roles, whether they like it or not. And I think he does hold them accountable. You know, he's going to play the guys who are going to help him win and not play the guys who aren't producing in practice. And I think those are his strengths. And I think from his NBA experience, or a roster turnover is a lot you know, happens a lot, and you're bringing in guys and you have guys up and down injured and all of that kind of stuff. I think he's set to do that, but you have to communicate roles and expectations, and then you have to hold people accountable and you trust the process. And the thing is, for me, I think those are his strengths, because he's in year two and we've been to the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row. And that first year he came in and these were none of his guys. I guess he brought Tamar in, right, and then Durr and some guys like that. But he had to start from scratch and got Indiana through that first year in the tournament. Now, we don't want to wait and have be a 12-seed play-in game again, so the, you know, hopefully the pieces fit a little bit better. But I think he's demonstrated in the first 2 years of a program where he doesn't have 100% of his guys that he's able to communicate and get these guys to play through adversity and find ways to win games. You know, that's how you do it. And then the icing on the cake is just design your offense and defense in ways and call it during the game to help. That's the technical piece. But if you don't have that team that's accepting their roles and playing together, which is why we're hesitant on the Love situation, that's going to be difficult. But that's the key. Communicate and accountability, and then run your process, and then hopefully it pays off with another trip to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, Ryan, what are your thoughts on how best to make that work?
I think it's hard to portal your way into a championship roster. I really do. I think it can be done. I just think you're walking a very narrow tightrope. If you do rely heavily on the portal, I think you need to build for 2 years. I think it's really hard to build for one. A perfect example is what happened with Xavier Johnson last year. Really struggled to find consistency, new situation, new people, new system, new everything, new home, you know? And by the end of the year, he was good. And so coming into this year, all the hype behind it was, we got our point guard. You know, this could be an all-conference point guard because he took that year to really figure it out. I think it's not the best you can hope for with a transfer. You can hope for a guy to step on campus, be amazing. And sometimes that happens. But I just think that you need to the best way to build the roster is to have recruits that stick around, maybe sprinkle in a guy like a Hood Schifino who's a one-year star, and then to also have, you know, supplement that with the players. If you're trying to find your stars in the portal, I think you're going to be disappointed for the most part. I think those guys need to supplement what you already have. I think that's the best way to do it. Can you do it the other way and just find all of your best players in the port? You can. Yeah. But it's a really, really narrow tightrope, because instead of bringing guys who fit into your culture, you're bringing guys to create their own culture, essentially. If you're bringing seven guys in, or so, you know, is this 5 to 7 guys in, they're going to bring their own thing and it can overwhelm what you already have built. And that's why, as Coach said, it's about the coaching staff being in control of that and being honest with everybody and being upfront and all of that. So it's tough for me to see building a championship roster through the portal, but it's not impossible. But I think that the basis needs to be have those guys you recruit who stick around, maybe sprinkle in a 5-star, and then where your gaps are in the roster, because you're not going to land every recruit you want, that's where you bring the portal guys in to fill those gaps, be great role players, occasionally be a really good, you know, starter who, you know, might be an all conference type player or something like that. But I think it's got to be a combination of the two in this world.
Yeah, I think if you find yourself in the position where you are looking for seven new guys on a year in, year out basis,
yep,
you're setting yourself up for trouble. Because realistically, as you know, you guys said, it's a little bit more like speed dating. You're not gonna the more that you take, the less likely you are to get them all right. And you might think that you've got a good process to pick out some guys, and you can probably survive 1 year where you take seven guys and four of them work out and three of them don't. But if you keep having that ratio year after year, you know, you got to be really, really confident. It's like the NFL draft, right? Like, there's teams that draft really well and then have it figured out. And there's teams that, doesn't matter how many picks they get, they're going to blow it. And so you got to be one who is getting it right a whole lot more than you're getting it wrong, if you want to do it that way. And I think you're doing that in some ways at the, you know, you're sacrificing culture to do some of that stuff. And that was one of the things that Cop brought up. And they brought up the end of that was, you know, culture versus talent. You know, culture gets you through the Big Ten season and gets you through some of the tough times. It's talent that wins when it comes down to it, you know, as you get later on. So you can't really let the balance of that skew too far one way or the other. And I just think that's not a way to make a living in the long term. I think having to do that occasionally is fine and probably is just the, you know, the series of circumstances that leads you to do that. But I do think it becomes pretty difficult. It puts a lot of pressure on that because you got to have enough guys to hold over to actually believe in what you've built already and have that perspective. You know, we talk about again with the Elston class and Watford and Holes and those guys, like, that team succeeded. They infused some talent, not through transfers. But in that case, like, those guys, it was important what they had been through, and that leadership from having been through the struggles for them was so huge. And they talk about that and how much it meant to them to want to be able to win and feel like they were turning the corner and things like that. I just think that's hard to do when you're turning over seven guys a year. Not to mention the fact, like I said, I just don't think anybody's good enough at picking out guys and how they're going to fit. It's one thing, you could pick out talented guys, but how they're going to fit together just feels like you're rolling the dice, you know, way too many times. Even with a team like Illinois this year, they got some of the best transfers that were out there. Everybody thought, with Shannon and Meyer, they were really up and down. They had guys to, you know, to mesh them with. Seemed like at times that was going well, times it wasn't. You know, they had some highs and lows and some struggles, and they actually played some of their best basketball at the beginning of the season. Their two best wins were at the beginning of the season, and they kind of trailed off a bit from there as you went. So I think even that, with just a few transfers that you relied heavily on, was really difficult for them, because you're turning over that many people. You're counting on those guys not just to come in, but to play prominent roles, and that becomes pretty difficult to me. So
yeah, and
that's why they get paid the big bucks.
Making a tournament, we have to be careful with our expectations, you know, not our standards. Our standards are still to get there. But if Woodson's truly building this thing, he can't miss. And these 7 or 9 guys, if it takes a really negative step backwards, then that's going to be tough in recruiting and getting the next group of guys in as well. I think the important thing is getting into the tournament and having a chance to advance. We've seen it happen before positively. I think Illinois got in the tournament, but they had some struggles. Kansas State, probably the best example of portal success. But I agree. I think to win a championship, you can't just bring in 7 to 9 guys, seven guys, and expect to be in the top 5 or top 10 of the NCAA next year. But you can be competitive, and you need to be competitive in order to keep this building going forward.
All right. Well, that will do it for us on this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, you can join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thank you to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of Rig Design for designing our logos, and thank you for listening. We'll be back with you next Thursday, unless there's other emergency pods to be had. But until then,
take it from me, Yogi Ferrell. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
That's it. We're done. No more questions.
That's defense. You got to talk. I ain't heard you say one word.
Just going through all the Woodson clips to try and find the right one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Go Padres, everybody.
Cronenworth get a hit yet?
No. I think he flew out. Bogaerts in his first at bat had a double. Grisham led off the game with a double. Soto got him to third, and then Machado to sac fly. And then Bogaerts doubled, and I think Cronenworth ended the inning. It's 1-1. It's pouring rain, so they keep having to put the sawdust on the field. So, yeah, Blake Snell is laboring a little, even though it's only 1-1. No Joe Musgrove or Yu Darvish to start the season isn't fun, but whatever. I think they'll be fine.
Well, they'll certainly be better than my team. So I can say that with great, great certainty.
That is fair. That is fair to say.
They better be.
Hey, hopefully hopefully Will Myers has a good season. You guys can trade him at the deadline for some prospects. You got some Hunter Green this year. Hunter Green will be good.
Oh, he was. You want to talk about laboring? I mean, really? He didn't make it out of the fourth inning. He struck out a bunch of guys, but he just throws so many pitches.
His stuff is so fun to watch, though, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was hitting 100 consistently, but yeah, it just takes him so many pitches. That was really one of the issues with him last year, too. So,
yeah. I'm bummed that he can't hit now because he was a big time hitter in high school.
I mean, given who else the Reds are playing, they might as well just throw him out there, let him hit.
Do an Ohtani thing and just let him DH for himself or something.
I don't see why not.
Yeah, because that dude hit bombs in high school. Like, he was hitting balls 450 as a high schooler, and it was just like, because they were wondering, there was like that thing where they were wondering if he would be drafted as an outfielder or a pitcher, and they just said there's so much more value in him as a pitcher who throws 100 than an outfielder who could hit maybe, you know, once he gets up to the big leagues, there's such a variance of how outfielders can develop. But you throw 100 miles an hour, they're going to make you a pitcher.
Yep. Agreed. All right.
All right, guys.
All right, fellas. Good chatting with you.